All right. Thank you, Kathy, and thanks, everybody, for being here today. And since Shayna put in a plug for her booth and the, what is it, the stress relief bear, I'm going to put a plug in for Apt Associates' booth where you will find my son's leftover Halloween candy. All right. So I'm going to talk about health research networks, and I have no financial disclosures, and I should say this work was funded by the Agency for Health Research and Quality, but it represents mine and my colleagues' opinions and not theirs. I'm going to talk about why study research networks. I'm going to talk about our emerging framework of networks, which we're just thinking about and are very interested in getting your feedback on and some thoughts about. And then I'll talk about our study aim and methods, a comparison of 9 research networks, and then conclusions and discussion. So why study research networks? And actually, before I go on any further, has anybody here been involved in a research network or a learning network? Okay, just a couple of folks. All right, that's helpful. So we were contracted by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality to facilitate a network of 45 investigators, all of whom ARC had given grants to, and they were all focused on multiple chronic conditions. So we wanted to, this was sort of, we were forging new territory, and we wanted to understand how our network compared to other networks, and we also wanted to reach out to other networks and learn what we could learn from them. So this is our sort of emerging framework, and maybe at the end you can give me some feedback on this. But we've had experience facilitating learning collaboratives, research networks, and learning networks. And we've started to think about them as sort of having some very distinct purposes and characteristics, and then also some overlapping characteristics. So, and I'm not going to talk today about learning collaboratives. They are the most probably well-defined type of networks, and they're really usually specifically developed to conduct health service and quality improvement projects. So I'm going to talk about research networks and learning networks, well, research networks, and then, but as I'll talk about, we've sort of found a hybrid in terms of research and learning networks. So research networks are really intended to facilitate large-scale research projects for the most part. And learning networks are generally to share knowledge on a common topic. But we have found that a lot of groups that call themselves research networks, in fact, are learning networks and vice versa, and then there's a group that's in the middle. So you can see here when we mapped the networks that we talked to, which all had sort of called themselves research network, what we found was a number of them were research networks. Two, including ours, were really a hybrid between a learning network and a research network, and one was really strictly a learning network. So as I mentioned, learning collaboratives, the primary purpose is quality improvement. Research networks, which really have proliferated, and all of these types of networks have proliferated in the last 20 years, but research networks generally are formed to aggregate research subjects, and then learning networks are really to share knowledge on a common topic, and that purpose overlaps with the other two types of networks. So these were the networks that we interviewed, and you can see here when we looked at their purpose by how we were defining the different types of networks, we had a number that were research networks, 2 that were hybrids, and 1 that was a learning network. The background of research networks really comes from the early 2000s when there was really this move to big science. And NIH had started requiring the inclusion of special populations, and to do that, you really had to have a much bigger sample size. There was also a move to more multidisciplinary care, multidisciplinary research and interdisciplinary research, and a kind of a conventional wisdom that if you brought different lenses to a similar problem, the whole group would gain more knowledge. So these are just some characteristics of research networks and the types of participants. as I mentioned, they're generally to aggregate subjects. But more recently, there have been research networks formed to bring a multidisciplinary lens to the same research question. And then, as in our case, a research network where researchers are working on the same topic, but not the same question. So our study aims, as I said, were to just understand more about research networks and to compare those characteristics with ours and to understand what were the facilitators to success and the barriers. We did a very thorough literature search, but not comprehensive. We developed an interview guide. We conducted our telephone interviews with 8 other networks, and we transcribed and coded the interviews. These are the groups that we talked with, this was our sample. So we had the Cancer Prevention and Control Research Network, which is really about taking the best evidence-based practices for cancer prevention and scaling them. We talked with CHARN, which is the Community Health Applied Research Network that conducts comparative effectiveness and PCOR research to improve patient care at federally supported community health centers. The CCRN, which is a practice-based research network conducting sort of pragmatic research in primary care practices. The MacArthur Research Network, which was the only grant-funded network that we spoke with, and they were probably the most similar to us. They were intended to enhance learning on socioeconomic status and health. The Medicaid Medical Directors Learning Network, which looks at research in states and thinks about how it can be applied in their own state. The HMO Research Network, and I'm not going to read this all. And these were some of the characteristics. The number of member organizations ranged from 10 to 78, but most research networks had about 10 to 20 sites. The duration was 2 to 21 years, and the average was 9 years. Half of the research networks had a coordinating center. Six of the 9 had a steering committee, and about half had subcommittees. And the methods for collaboration across all of these networks were very similar. So they were all using in-person meetings, conference calls, work groups, webinars, collaborative workspaces, listservs, and in some cases, a data registry. So what we learned from our interviews was that the probably the most critical component was face-to-face time. So in-person meetings, developing trust, relationships, collaboration. One of the respondents said a facilitator was the ability to build trust and affection that gets past disciplinary differences. They talked about a shared vision and a passion for the work, and then also being ready to enter into a collaborative network. And the readiness varied a lot among the groups that we talked with. The barriers included funding mechanisms, so especially for the ones that were only funded for a very short amount of time, the amount of collaboration and shared knowledge and shared research they could do was just, you know, kind of logistically dependent on how much time they had together. And one of them, this was a nice quote, said you need to have a long-term investment because it's inefficient in the short term. Researchers need to know if the network is going to be supported for long enough to get the payoff, which is approximately 7 to 10 years. The other barriers were just competing demands for investigator time and then geographic dispersion. And I should say that what we heard from the other research networks was very comparable to what we learned in our own evaluation of our research network. So the lessons learned were the investment in infrastructure is important, leadership was critical, the support and feeling part of something larger was very critical part of the success. An unintended consequence was that these networks tended to be a training and career development opportunity, so a lot of the junior investigators would be brought along by the senior investigators. The importance of intentional facilitation was, I can talk more about this later, but it was a critical piece. And then I think all of the networks would agree that a readiness assessment before, during, and after would be an important piece. So the bottom line is there are variations of research networks and learning networks. They encourage knowledge sharing among researchers. They may accelerate the pace of research. The parameters of each of these types of networks are not distinct, and there are very limited evaluations of any of the methods, and more work is needed to define and measure success. Thank you.